The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com, is heard on the We Be Geeks Collective and on sci-fi.radio.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I would say that E3 maybe isn't the event that it once was, but everybody still plans their event around the E3 schedule.
Steven Spielberg could throw out a gum commercial and we'd all watch it because it's Steven Spielberg.
Dragon Age 4 is carrying, I think, the future of BioWare on its shoulders.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and right here on the ESO Network.
Welcome back to the Con Guy Podcast, everybody. We are your home for discussing all the fandoms, the movies, and the people you love. Why do we call ourselves the Con Guy, you might ask? Because when there's not a pandemic, we hit as many fan conventions and comic cons as we can. Get it? Con Guy? Comic Con Guy? What was that line from Joss? Ka, my ka. It's the Con Guy.
My con, yad.
Yes.
Not this too week. Far.
Not too far. This week, we are privileged, very privileged, to talk with a true member of the Jaws family. Literally, part of the Jaws family. David H. Hamilton. If you're a super fan like we are, then you probably already know that David is the son of Murray Hamilton, our favorite mayor, Mayor Vaughn. He was a mayor of Amity Island. David, welcome to the Con Guy. We are so glad to have you on today.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
All right. And let me also welcome Luke Cheeseman.
Hello, Cheeseman here. Excited to be talking Jaws again.
Mm-hmm. And good old buddy Ben.
Hey everybody, it's old buddy Ben Cleaver, actor, comedian, regular contributor to the Con Guy.
Before we jump into the bulk of Jaws though, if people want to find out what you're up to and kind of like where they can watch, you know, how would they find out information?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't have a website or anything like that. Just check out Facebook and YouTube. I did a cabaret act 6 years ago that floats around YouTube. So you can hear me singing.
All right.
With my good friend Lisa.
Your dad was quite the singer too, right?
I'm sorry?
Your dad was quite the singer as well, I've heard.
He was. He actually made an album that was not released, but I have it. I keep promising Michael Smith to send him the cassette, and he said he can make copies of it, but it's somewhere in a box somewhere here. I'll get to it. But dad loved to sing and play the guitar, and his big regret was not having ever done a musical.
Oh, wow.
But you've done a lot of that for him.
Yeah, and now that's mainly what I do. So it's
It's kind of surprising because when you look at his IMDb page, you find out it's this long. Like, I mean, he was in so much, and like I guess they call it like one of the golden ages of TV. He was on all those shows that. Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, we kind of don't have that today so much, that kind of like shows where you can have a lot of guest stars on and everything, you know?
Yeah, it's true. There's Law and Order, and that's the only one I can think of that has the same actors do three or four different episodes as four different characters. But other than that, that sort of doesn't really happen anymore. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, he couldn't – you hard to stump me on – 60s and 70s shows.
Yeah.
And he was usually the bad guy, usually the one that did it, or at least the smarmy, you know, crooked jerk. You know, hey, Mayor Vaughn doesn't do anything illegal, technically. Mm-hmm. He's just a fool that costs a lot of people their lives.
Well, what we've been doing, David, is we've been celebrating the 45th anniversary of Jaws, and we've had some great guests on the show. But I got to tell you, your dad, he was one of the best actors, one of the most memorable performances, and it was so lifelike. You know, it didn't seem like he was acting. It was so such a steam ceiling performance. Those jackets that he had. I mean, where can we get those jackets?
I know that the other podcast I did with Michael, a lot of people wanted to know if I had that. If I say, but nope, doggone it, he didn't have the foresight to either swipe the jacket or buy it off the costume department or whatever. So I wish I had it. I have teeth. I have shark teeth. But
Oh, really?
Again, somewhere in a lockbox, but
that's awesome.
One from each of his. He obviously just did one and two, and then then
it what were those nuts. Particular ones made out of?
Oh, is that all? Just one and two?
Well, interesting, because the original one is very hard. You know, I'm not sure what's made of. Like, you know, plaster, like really hard, which is why it bit through the protective vest that Robert Shaw had and almost killed him and drew blood. And, you know, they said, okay, let's go with rubber for two. So two, you can just squeeze between your fingers. But the first one is pretty substantial.
I didn't know that. It went through Robert Shaw's vest?
It did. I mean, not a serious injury, but it drew blood. I remember them telling us. And, you know, that's not good. I'm sure he wasn't pleased.
Wow.
I'm
sure
he looked great.
So he had a real scar from the movie. It wasn't the fake ones he was showing off. So he actually got a real Bruce scar.
That's right. Well,
I just want to ask one question to kind of like get a sense of Jaws mode, because we love Jaws. Can you just tell us, what was it like growing up in being part of the Jaws family like you were? What an incredible legacy. Like, what was that like growing up?
Well, I mean, certainly it was gradual, of course, because at first it was just the latest movie my dad was in. And that was fun. And being on the set was fun. And, you know, meeting all the stars. But then it became this phenomenon. And, you know, the first, you know, credited with being the first summer blockbuster. And now it's still, I mean, still today I get, there are websites, I get things like this, invitations to things like this. Some dad's, you know, a meme now with the political situation, you know, equating you know who with Mayor Vaughn. And I mean, it's a weird sort of immortality for him. That, of course, he's missing, although I like to think he's seeing it wherever he is. But yet, it's pretty wacky, not to mention the residuals.
There you go. Well, wherever he is, I'm toasting to Mayor Vaughn right now. And
cheers, Dad.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Mayor Vaughn. All right. Well,
you know, there's even a, well, you probably know, there's a,
maybe not,
a Facebook page devoted to his jacket. It's called Mayor Larry Vaughn's Anchor Jacket. And it has people like commenting all the time, every time it's on TV. Or
did you guys know that?
I didn't.
I'd never heard of that.
A friend alerted me to it like 5 years ago. And so I've chimed in occasionally. They're like, oh my God. Right.
That's awesome. All right, go ahead, Ben. Luke.
Luke, you got questions?
Yeah, sure. So I heard there was a little bit of a, like an almost feud with Richard Dreyfuss on set with your dad, but luckily it didn't happen. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. My dad was a very old school actor, and he was, what would he have been, like 53, 52 when he was filming that movie. And Dreyfuss, of course, was one of the newer fellas from a different school. You know, dad never went to acting school or any of that stuff. He believed in, you know, learn your lines, hit your mark, do what the director tells you, do it as rehearsed. And in the famous scene in front of the billboard where they're trying to convince him to see the light, at, I believe, the part where Dreyfuss says the famous line, and I believe you'll ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass, you know, that one. Yeah. During one of the takes, he grabbed my dad by the collar, having never done that before, never rehearsed it before. And it seems minor now because it probably, I mean, not many actors nowadays would mind that, but dad minded that, being grabbed by the collar without being warned first that he was about to be grabbed by the collar. So he stopped and marched over to Spielberg, and obviously I'll clean up the language, but said the equivalent of, you tell that effing kid if he lays his hand on me again, I'm walking.
So, oh, seriously?
Yeah. So that's why in the final cut, it's just an argument, not fisticuffs.
It's not a physical altercation.
Exactly. And I mean, you see where Dreyfuss was coming, and I'm sure it was very organic and felt right to him. And again, and my dad, as he was defending himself later, would say, you know, I'm not saying the moment wouldn't have worked, but tell me and we'll rehearse it. We'll run through it a few times, you grabbing me, and maybe it'll be great, you know, but can't just do it.
Did you ever interact with Dreyfuss, Schneider, Shaw, anybody?
Not really. Mostly Lorraine Gary was a...
Oh, yeah. Well,
still is, God bless her. It's the sweetest person ever. And, you know, I sort of bonded with her. And I remember her taking me on on the Universal tour, the VIP tour, in later years. Of course, there wasn't... Right. A Jaws display until it was a legendary movie. But I think during Jaws 2, she took me on it. She was just a really sweet, lovely person, and I'm sure still is at 80, whatever, 83. Yeah. Roy Scheider, I remember a few interactions with. I have no recollection of Robert Shaw at all. I think he pretty much, they wrapped for the day and he went to wherever the local bar was, where, yes, full disclosure, my dad would, I'm certain, join him at some point in those days. Not by Jaws 2, but in those days. Oh, and sorry, and Jeffrey Kramer became a friend of ours, the, you know, deputy.
Yeah.
Deputy Hendricks. So he was over to the house a lot. He lived in New York also. So he and his girlfriend would come over and we'd have dinner. I remember going to a block party with them once. Really nice guy.
Had him on the show, and he was.
And I got his picture autograph right there too, behind me.
Cool. He was just so talkative and kind, and he was kind of like you. He's like, hey, well, let's go on for as long as you guys want. He was great.
I got assistants here.
Oh, there you go.
I saw hands.
He was a delight. Who is that in the background, Luke?
This is Patrick Rieger, a musician actor, so you'd appreciate that. He's also does a lot of theater as well. His name's Patrick Rieger, and he's in a band, Whiskey Sunday, but he's hanging out.
Hey, Patrick.
Yeah, he's been doing some of these stories as well. Yeah. Actor stories. Yep.
You're just housing random people in your apartment? What are you doing there?
Yeah. And he's actually written a play too, so he's working on the second draft of that and going to be probably doing a play of that eventually.
Cool.
Awesome.
And Ben, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was. I just wanted to know, David, how old were you when this was happening? I forgot.
I would have been 12.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it was, you know, young enough that it was amazing, but too young to fully appreciate. Unfortunately, most of my dad's career and my experiences and stories, I was too young to appreciate, you know, now that I was 23 when he passed. And now I look back and go, oh, but you know, when you're 10 and you have dinner with, you know, Paul Newman, it's just, oh, who's this friend of my dad's?
Right.
Nice eyes. But, you know, that's.
So you had dinner with Paul Newman?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, I mean, dad had, you know, all of his friends were in the business. So
I was partly named after his movie Cool Hand Luke. So
oh really?
Like Paul Newman.
Okay.
There you go.
Cool Hand Luke, directed by my dad's best friend and our best family friend, Stuart Rosenberg.
Really?
It's that such was a great movie. Yeah. And like the pacing and the cinematography, it still holds up to this day. Like I have the Blu-ray version. I'm like impressed how good that story is told and how just well the film was made.
Yep. Yep. I agree. Yeah.
Dad
did a bunch of his movies, Stu Rosenberg, but unfortunately not that one. He easily could have been the Strother Martin part if you think about it, but alas.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you know, I'm sure, particularly with shows that bring you on as a guest revolving around Jaws, as ours is today, you know, it's a lot of times talking about your dad. Tell us about what your dad did, and did your dad do this, and what was it like for your dad with this? And I'm a little bit more interested right now, and obviously your dad can't go on shows, a relatable point for me is I lost my dad when I was 24. So, that's a rough age to lose a dad. So I definitely sympathize with that.
It's young enough to be way too soon, mm-hmm. yet you're old enough to totally get it.
Right.
And for it to really affect you. Like, obviously it's horrible if you're five, but it sort of things bounce off you more, you know?
Right. Right. How does being a part of the Jaws legacy through your dad, how does that affect you? How has that affected you through your life? What has your experience been? And I know that's kind of a broad question, but I want to know how Jaws has affected you, David.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it certainly was, along with The Graduate, the thing he's most known for. Mm-hmm. So it's my go-to, that and The Graduate, because as you guys know, my dad was a character actor. So we'd go out and he'd always get recognized, but it was incredibly rare that anyone could call up his name.
Right.
Like, oh, you're an actor, right? Or Al Holbrook? And like, he looked like Al Holbrook. And then now when people ask, would I know your dad? I go right to Jaws. It's just one of those things that's pretty much foolproof. And then occasionally they're like, oh, I don't do scary movies. Well, how about The Graduate? And, oh, The Graduate. So,
right.
So it's, and then sometimes people impress me with, wait, what? Wasn't he in, you know,
yes,
13 Frightened Girls or
Twilight Zone? Yeah.
He was the first Mr. Death.
Mm-hmm.
Then even when Redford had to go and be Mr. Death in a different episode, and
he
now
was,
people think he's Mr.
He, okay. Here's a question, and see if Ben, I'm testing your knowledge, Ben, see if you can answer this one.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so I have my question. Okay, Murray Hamilton, the great character actor, was in two franchises with the word amity in them. What's the non-Jaws franchise that he was in?
Amityville Horror?
Yes, he was a priest in Amityville Horror, one of my all-time favorite horror movies. He was great in that.
Directed by Stuart Rosenberg, yep.
Yeah. It was back in the days, we're kind of back, like horror movies went through a schlocky phase, but back in the 70s, they were very well respected, had, you know, named actors, like the music was nominated for an Academy Award. I mean, it was just like such a great movie, and your dad was great in that.
Well, thank you. And of course, playing the same part. Oh, the voices, not believing Rod Steiger the way they didn't believe Roy Scheider. So,
oh, that was great. Yeah, the thing that was so great about your dad, I mean, and I want to hear your stories, but I just remember it because you started looking him up and you're like, oh yeah, he was in that. Oh yeah, you see him in everything. And one of the roles that I forgot that he was in until, you know, I was looking him up was like, he was in The Golden Girls.
He originated the role of Big Daddy in Golden Girls. Bittersweet, of course, because it was the last thing he ever filmed, not the last thing that aired was the Last Days of Patton TV movie.
Yep.
Dad, well, actually, see, again, as you, well, you say you saw the Michael Smith, so I can just,
no, come
you
on.
Have to, like,
yeah.
put a muzzle on me, but I've always enjoyed a circle of life story that I'll make as brief as possible. My dad's big break.
Take your time.
Well, my dad's big break was in a play called Mr. Roberts on Broadway, playing Ensign Pulver. But he didn't originate the role. The role was originated by David Wayne, great actor. And when David Wayne left to go to Hollywood to make actual money instead of theater money, dad replaced him. And that launched him. He did it for a year on Broadway. He did it in Chicago. They have their whole careers. David Wayne's a little more famous, of course. They come to the end of their career. Dad originates the role as Big Daddy, Golden Girls, passes away. Who replaces him as Big Daddy? David Wayne.
That's a beautiful story.
It's, I've always loved that circle of actor life story. So
yeah, yeah. All right, Luke.
Oh. So like how much did you get to like be behind the scenes of like the Jaws films? Like, were you just there like a couple days, or were you there for a while? Like what scenes did you get to see filmed?
Well, in the original, we were sort of in and out because I was, you know, young. So we spent, a good month there, I think. I was around much more on Jaws 2. Mm-hmm. Is that we just spent the whole summer in Pensacola, Florida, and like that. But I was around a bit. But again, I was too young to really, you know, dad was never the type to push interest like, come here, look, see, here's how the camera works. Or like I'm sure many fathers do now for their kids. So I just sort of hung out. Sat by the pool with mom and, you know, would visit the set and meet assorted people. But, you know, as far as watching actual scenes, I remember watching the dailies, which was fun for me, my first time doing that, and watching everyone out of character, break character. I remember spending a little bit of time with Spielberg, but not much.
Well, that's cool.
More on the set of 1941, which the other Spielberg movie dad was in. Not quite as successful or good as Jaws, but it's
very,
there.
Very few films are as good as Jaws.
True.
But they had an awesome parody Jaws scene at the beginning with Susan Blackleeney, where they kind of recreated that. That was such genius, and to do it that close.
That's right. I forgot that. You're right. Yeah.
Now, did you get to see the shark in person when you are set for either of those?
Well, of course, the first one famously was never working, was always in a shop somewhere. So not so much that one. Jaws 2, yeah, all the time. I remember they let me drive the motorboat out to where it was docked, for lack of a better word, and, you know, get a real good look at it. Wish there had been cell phones in those days. I could have snapped a lot of pictures. But I remember getting real close to that.
Do you ever go back and visit any of the sets, the scene, the locations where they filmed? Not the sets, because it was all in Martha's Vineyard. Do you ever go back and just kind of relive some of that?
You know, I haven't. And I know they have a yearly festival or whatever,
mm-hmm.
The Martha's Vineyard, that I've been invited to, I'd be fascinated to do that. I know they have it all like marked out, like this was where this happened, this was, so yeah, that would be fun. But yeah, no, I haven't.
That's cool.
Let's all go.
Hey, Ben, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just, you know, looking over your father's kind of film and television legacy here. He's got 159 credits on IMDb. plus probably countless others that either haven't been on there or are live theater or whatever. How did that, you know, you're an actor now doing a lot of stage. How did his acting legacy feed into your, you know, desire to pursue acting, or was, you know, and you said he didn't like to push a lot of interests on you, but was he I assume he was that influential on you in becoming an actor yourself.
Oh, sure, sure. Except for a brief period of time where I was good at basketball and thought, I'm going to be a ball player. But then I didn't grow. And it was sort of never a question. It was the family business. My mom was a singer. My dad was an actor. Neither of them ever did anything else. So it just sort of, he didn't like push me towards it, but it was just sort of a given. It was like, it was never any question. Of course I was an actor. I learned a lot from him. He was the type that would lead by example rather than, you know, preach. I mean, he'd give pointers here and there and answer any questions, but, you know, kind of like a good baseball player, lead by example is the, can't beat that. Mm-hmm. You watch and you go, oh, okay, I see. Never be late. Never, ever, under any circumstances, be late. Always know your lines. Always hit your mark.
Mm-hmm.
Never show up drunk.
Unless you're Robert Shaw.
Exactly. Unless you can pull it off anyway, which he did.
He did. He did. Let me ask you this question. Because there are so many, a movie like Jaws has so many fans, like all of us are, that, you know, we see every aspect of it and we think we know everything about it. But Jaws was done in the days before TMZ, before all this, everybody with cell phones and stuff. And maybe, is there something about your dad that maybe most of us fans don't know that is, I don't know, what's a cool thing that you remember about your dad that is not something that all the fans are eating up? Something just kind of cool that you remember about him.
Ooh, wow, what an interesting question. Gee, I wish I'd had that question ahead of time.
Sorry.
He was an interesting man. He was very, at times, very shy, very, he was not social. He didn't go to the parties. He didn't, shake the hemming. I always thought he could have been much, you know, more of a star, not, I mean, he did fine. I'd kill for his career, of course, but he didn't shake the right hands. He didn't play the games, you know. He turned down Close Encounters.
What?
Wow.
As Spielberg was pitching it to him, he was going to be... Spielberg went a very different way with it, with Francois Truffaut at the end there, the scientist with the, or whatever. But Dad just didn't find the plot interesting and wasn't good at like smiling and nodding. So sort of, I think Spielberg got that. And
Did he regret that?
I don't think so. I mean, he may have, and not openly anyway. But you know, he was sometimes painfully shy, especially after he had to stop drinking, which was 78, 9, somewhere around there. He finally had to shut it down entirely.
Mm-hmm.
If he did go out, he'd get Perrier with a lime or a lemon. So it looked like a drink because he was embarrassed to not be drinking, that sort of thing. Just growing up in a different time.
Right.
But, you know, he was also the most generous and warmest person that anyone could ever meet. He was both. And, you know, he had every good friend he had eventually sort of drifted away, not because of anything wrong. I mean, his best friend before I was born was George C. Scott, too.
Wow.
Humble name drop again. But then by the time I was old enough to have known that, they had sort of drifted apart. And then Stu Rosenberg was our closest family friend for the rest of his life. But even that, the last couple of years of my dad's life, they sort of, I don't even want to say estranged, it just sort of drifted.
Mm-hmm.
And we only reconnected after Dad passed and then saw and talked to them all the time. Again, just my mom and I. So, and Stu put me in a movie and got my my one movie, my heroes have always been cowboys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Straight to landfill. But oh, it got my SAG AFTRA card on it. So, and good. A cool cast, you know, it was like Scott Glenn and Kate Capshaw and Mickey Rooney and Gary Busey and Ben Johnson.
Wow.
You say it's your only, it's your only one. Is it, you did not choose to pursue that avenue or?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't seem to audition much for film, or TV. I've just done a lot of theater and a lot of musical theater because that's where my passion is. Not that I would turn down anything. And now I'm doing all this Shakespeare. I mean, it's just Zoom readings, but I had never done Shakespeare before the show that had to close because of the, you know, Armageddon. And I just went musical theater route, which, of course, is not nearly the living in that there is. And, you know, one, I mean, I did a Tums commercial years ago and, you know, made more money in those 2 days than in like a decent run of a show. You know, it's just, that's that, that I don't have to tell you. That's the way it is.
Now, I have a question about, now this is from the book, The Jaws Log. Your dad is notoriously known for that skunk incident that happened. Can you tell us, did he end up remembering it or did he ever tell you the story? Or did you hear about it from the book? Can you tell us about that?
I totally heard about it from the book. It's so, yeah, I have no insights that you, I wish I did, but yeah. It's interesting. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff in that book that, like, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he got sprayed by a skunk, like, after going out one night and then ended up kind of falling asleep in the lobby of the hotel and stunk up the hotel. And then people kind of forced him, like, to shower him, get him ready for set the next day, took his clothes. They probably burned him. I don't know what happened to him, but big
I guess he I guess he didn't want to remember it, I think.
Yeah.
That's a funny story, though. That's good. Yeah. Let me ask you this, and then I'll pitch it over to Ben. So besides Jaws or The Graduate, besides those two films, what do you, when people talk to you, what of your dad's acting jobs do they most talk to you about or ask questions about?
You know, it's interesting how many times I get The Hustler. People, because it's a memorable, very short role, but a very memorable sort of broadly drawn character. And people really remember that and ask about that. And, you know, real movie buffs will often like try to, I mean, not impress me, but want to show that they really, so they'll mention a movie called Seconds, a Rock Hudson movie that Dad was in. And, the FBI's Anatomy of a Murder is another famous one, certainly.
Yeah.
That he was in. But yeah, a lot of people ask about The Hustler, and I don't know if you all remember, but he played the sort of effeminate billiards player at the end there that loses hundreds of thousands of dollars to Paul Newman. And Dad held a cigarette between these two fingers instead of the usual two fingers, which was his choice. He just thought it was an interesting character choice for this guy. And people ask about that all the time. So you never know what.
All right, Ben,
did you and your dad ever act in anything together?
No, I wish. He had this dream of, there's a play called A Thousand Clowns by Herb Gardner that is about a father and son that he really wanted to do with me, but just never happened. I didn't really come out of my shell. I came out of my shell pretty late, and by then Dad was sort of in the wane, and then it just never happened.
Yeah.
Mm.
I just have a just general question about growing up in Hollywood. What was it like just growing up with all these famous people around, and kind of when did you know that your dad was such a big deal?
Well, interesting question. First of all, spent as dad was no offense to Hollywood or Los Angeles, but dad was not a fan.
No offense taken. So
we lived in New York my entire life, still do. Dad was from North Carolina, moved to New York. We never, ever lived in California. We just visited him constantly. Now, granted, he worked so much that it felt like it. I mean, I spent many Christmas there and many, you know, summer there, but can't say I grew up there.
Right.
And I guess I started realizing that dad was successful when we just couldn't leave the house without someone going, hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
And sometimes celebrities coming, I remember. And again, this is, I feel like I'm name dropping, but we were eating dinner once and guy came over and dad had a beard and he was like, you can't fool me, hide behind that beard. You're the best actor in the, and he left and dad was like, who the hell was that? And we were like, that's Christopher Walken. You don't know Christopher Walken?
Wow.
Yeah. Dad wasn't up with the younger fellas back in the day. But that sort of thing. But again, I mean, he would have known his name, but just the average person on the street, they just knew they knew him, usually as far as you're an actor, right? Sometimes just, I know you, right? I'm the cleaners? No, no, I'm an actor.
I got a question from the audience here. Patrick, who is watching, he wanted to ask you a question as an actor, David.
Hey, David, how are you?
Hello. Nice to meet you.
I'm a fellow actor dad, actor son, member of that support group.
Well, thank you.
I'm really curious. You know, your dad's one of the only fellas in the movie who has an incredibly heartbreaking arc. You know,
yeah.
All the leads are very on one track, and we love them for that one track. But we see in your dad's performance that heartache from being the cavalier mayor in charge of everyone's happiness and everyone's well-being to, oh my God, what have I done? Mm-hmm. That's a scary arc, right?
Exactly, absolutely.
So I'm just curious if Spielberg saw something in him. Why did he cast him? What was he drawn to in your dad's work? And what did you inherit from your dad, you know, ability to make that potentially very two-dimensional mayor character totally with depth and heartbreaking?
Cool. Yeah, it's great. I mean, first of all, I mean, dad was incredibly grateful to, you know, the writers and the storyteller for giving him that. Not to leave it to me to find a negative flip on it, but as heart-wrenching as that moment is, it's not as heart-wrenching as much as my dad's actual heart was wrenched in Jaws 2 when inexplicably, turns out he didn't learn his lesson. That killed dad. That, and in fact, again, you guys probably know, but in Jaws 2, they filmed dad being the only one that does not vote to fire Roy Scheider. But that is in the extras on the DVD, I believe.
Wow.
But and dad fought for it and said, but the first movie, my kids were on that beach too. And now I'm like, I don't think it's a shark. Even if it isn't a shark, wouldn't you now lean in the other direction? But he didn't. But he was very grateful to have the arc in the first movie and extra frustrated by having it taken away from him in the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as what that taught me, it taught me that if it's there find it in a role you're playing, because nothing's more boring than just being the same all the way across. I mean, unless it's a, you know, wacky slapstick comedy or where it doesn't, or even a musical where it doesn't really matter. But in anything of any substance, you know, find that arc, you know, because it's crucial. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a fantastic answer. We are kind of getting close to the end of our time here. So I
never shut up. So
no, we could go on all night, but we want to be conscientious of your time. So, Ben, do you have anything else that you would like to ask David before we kind of start heading out?
Oh, man. I don't know. We kind of covered everything that I've been talking about. I as an acting nerd myself, I always just like hearing about the stories of being on set. We've interviewed Joe Alves and Carl Gottlieb and folks like that. Some of the old timers who were, you know, doing this back in the day by their shoestrings and some macaroni, you know. You know, and when it comes down to it, what I find is that filmmaking is at its core, we see the red carpets and the tuxes and the dresses and all that glamour. But when it comes down to it, when you're on set or when you're on the stage, acting is very blue collar work, because you're in there and you're getting exhausted and you're using your hands and your brain and your voice and your body. And I appreciate character actors like your dad so much. Because character acting, if you look at some of the great names in character acting, Gary Oldman, among others, he's my personal favorite. That's why I bring him up. Or Chris Walken, who is also. it's not something everybody can do. And for somebody like your dad to make a career and have 160 credits to his name that we have recorded on this database, probably many more. That is an impressive legacy and one that I'm sure you're carrying on most honorably. So, yeah, just thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. This is great. Any time.
Luke.
Yeah, kind of with that. I've heard you talk before about your dad, like, got kind of typecasted a lot as like certain characters. What kind of characters did he kind of like really dream of doing or really like desire? Like, these are the type of characters that he never really got to play.
He loved doing comedy, and they so rarely let him. That's why he was thrilled to do 1941. He was thrilled to do No Time for Sergeants, even though he's playing his typical, you know, redneck jerk. It was a comedic redneck jerk, at least. Favorite film he ever did is called The Girl He Left Behind. Tab Hunter, Natalie Wood. Mm-hmm. Not a great movie, but Dad was a comedic drill sergeant. So he just loved doing comedy and working on that. I remembered 1941, if you remember the movie on the Ferris wheel with Eddie Deason, when Eddie Deason first whips out the puppet and Dad is smoking a cigarette and he lets the cigarette fall from his mouth, but he wanted it to hang there. And I used to watch him in our living room practicing, wetting his lip, trying to find just the right amount to make it hang there, thinking that would be much funnier. He only nailed it a couple of times and that didn't end up the take they kept. But so he loved comedy. So
I think that Mayor Vaughn is a funny character. Just watching him being so pompous and pop up and
around.
I just think he's great. It's one of my favorite all-time characters in the film. Hey, I have one last question.
One of my favorite readings of my dad.
Yeah. So Luke's going to have something for you. Our last thing we're going to close with, he's got a little speed round for you, but I just want to know, how did your dad speak of Jaws in the years after Jaws? How did he, like, when he would talk about his time on set and talk about his legacy with Jaws, I'm just curious, like, how would he speak of it?
Unfortunately, Dad's biggest fault as a person, and probably bleeding into his career, was bitterness. He feels he had been jerked around a lot in his career, which he was. I mean, not by Jaws or anyone. Mm-hmm. before that, the movie version of Mr. Roberts, which he was promised when he was doing it on Broadway, and then ended up Jack Lemmon, and little things like that. So he didn't talk about much positively. you know, Spielberg, he had trouble with someone that young. Mm-hmm. And green at the time, obviously. Yeah. He's done okay for himself since then. He doesn't need the editor to save him the way Verna Fields saved him in Jaws. So Dad just didn't, he rarely enjoyed anything. He did a show on Broadway called 40 Carats. My mom always used to tell the story. He heard, like, through the grapevine that they were going to close, that tonight was going to be the night he goes, and the posting's up to say you're closing. And every night he'd, like, be depressed and go, well, I'm sure it's the last one. Ran for, like, 2 years. But every night he was miserable because he just, that's where his mind went. Mm. So.
Mm. That's,
I know that's a little deeper than you meant.
No, that's a perfect answer. Like you and Ben and your dad, you know, I'm not an actor per se. So that's a world that I don't live in, but that's sound like when I talk to actors, it's not always like, it's so great. No, it's how hard it is. It is like one of the hardest things in the world.
Oh yeah. A constant disappointment, constant heartbreak. You know, it's,
you guys got to have such thick skin.
And yet we can't stop doing it, Jim.
And yet you can't stop doing it. Yep.
All right. So to close out the show, we have this thing called five questions. It is, Luke's going to ask you a quick five questions if his camera doesn't freeze up. And then you're going to give us your first thing that comes to your head.
I ready still to do my best. I'm terrified. Right. Yeah. Okay.
I just have one quick warm-up question because I'm just curious. Did your dad improvise any of the lines in Jaws? Because I know that was a big thing on the making of the film, that a lot of people would improvise things.
Right. No, Dad was against that, basically. Okay. So he didn't mind if others did it as long as he was forewarned, like anything. But no, Dad was not an improviser.
Yeah. All right.
I would say my favorite line he did was the Barracuda line. Like,
I love it.
Barracuda. And everybody's
That's
you yell shark. We got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
That's
one of the most iconic lines.
And the pause that I appreciated Spielberg for giving him that pause, because it's a lengthy one for a, you know, action movie. But so that was,
brilliantly delivered, I would say. Yep.
All right. Here's our five things.
Five questions.
All right,
and you can say more than one answer if you want. So, okay. All right. First one should be easy for you, but you can list more than one. So, question number one: favorite character in Jaws.
Oh, favorite. well, I mean, boy, it's hard not to choose my dad, of course. So I'm trying to choose a different one, but no, it's Quint. It's even over my dad. I mean, I think my dad was fantastic, but it's Robert Shaw that makes that movie to me. But.
Agree.
I agree. Question number two, what is your favorite line from the film?
It belongs to Robert Shaw in the speech he wrote, but I just found it chilling during the famous monologue. I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Yeah.
Great line.
That's my favorite.
All right. Question number three, favorite scene in Jaws.
Ooh, well, Dad, I'm going to have to go back to Dad. I'm going to, because easy to say the Indianapolis monologue, but Dad in the hospital room, like you said, with finally realizing, oh my God, what I was, because he, as big a bastard as he really was just trying to do his job and think of the overall good of his constituents, you know, and lose a lot of money if you make all your money on 4th of July weekend and you shut down. So he really was trying to do the right thing. And when he realizes that, oh boy, did he not. that's a great scene. I get a little teary every time. Actually.
That's an amazing scene. Amazing scene. Yeah.
Yep, I agree. All right. Question number four, and you kind of talked about this before. Do you have any, what props from set do you have, or do you collect different merchandise or t-shirts or other things? Like, what do you have in the Jaws world of collecting?
You know, shockingly little. I mean, I'm happy to have the two teeth. I have a program in from the premiere that's still locked away somewhere. Wow. I have another program in Japanese.
Nice.
From, I guess, their premiere. All the t-shirts. I still have my Jaws 2 t-shirt, but it would fit on my arm now. So, but I have it in there somewhere. So, yeah, not a whole lot.
How big are the teeth?
I'd say about like that, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, maybe Richard Griffin said about the size of a shot glass. So would you
right,
say
exactly.
Awesome.
That's another good line of dad. So you don't have the tooth.
I love it.
Marmy little arrogant.
So Ben Gardner's body wasn't enough for him. He actually
All right.
So question number five, and this could definitely apply to you as well. Like, what was your favorite day or memory, like being on set of the filming of any either Jaws movie?
Of either Jaws movie, did you say favorite or most memorable?
Either or.
Yeah.
I remember the opening scene of Jaws 2. Just they were having all sorts of problems. Roy Scheider, God bless him, wonderful actor, but did not get along real well with the director, Jeannot Schwark, who had only done TV up till that point. And I remember Scheider walking back and forth, just letting him have it in front of everybody. I mean, onlookers, the cast. It was really not cool. And then I remember when they finally got the final shot of that set, Jeannot Schwark, fully clothed, jumped into the pool in celebration. I remember watching that from the balcony as all the camera equipment was below, so you could just hang on the balcony and watch. So I watched that, you know, the ribbon cutting and all that, if you remember that scene. First.
Luke, any more questions in the five questions? Did you have a bonus one?
I think we're, I mean, he did the nice warm up question. So I say we're covered there, but, Jake, had a question, another audience question that he wanted to know. He wanted us to ask you if like, did people like when you'd be hanging out with your dad and like walking around after the movie came out, like would people like yell stuff like close the beaches or just kind of like joke with him or scream lines from different movies out at him just randomly? You're walking, someone recognize him and say stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. They would yell that, and the scene in The Graduate where he tells off Dustin Hoffman, "You are filth. I think you are scum. You are a degenerate." People would just yell that. Oh, I'm just kidding. That was you're great. I'm scum. That's when they could place him. You know, still couldn't get his name, but they're like, "Oh yeah, Graduate."
I know that face. You know what? We all are gigantic fans of your dad. And after having met you, I'm a fan of yours. You seem like such a great guy. No, it is.
We want to see your acting.
Yeah, we want to be able to see you act one of these times. So thank maybe you.
Well, I'll shoot an email to you the next time that I'm in a reading that's open to the public. So,
well, David. Awesome. David, thank you so much for coming on and talking.
Thank you so much
about your dad. Like, I know that, you know, he's so special to all of us, but I know he's your dad, and that was so cool for you to come on to kind of share memories of your dad. That's a cool thing for us. We are fans of the movie. We're fans of your dad, and now we're new friends. So we'll talk more.
And he was a great dad, by the way. I hope I didn't get too real on you. I mean, yes, he was bitter. Yes, he was a recovering alcoholic, but he was a great dad who loved us and took care of us and Still does. I mean, it's still fun to go to the mailbox because unfortunately I get the residuals now. Mom's gone. I'm an only child. So,
well,
he's still providing for his son.
That's an awesome memory. That is an awesome memory. And again, thank you for coming on the show. We hope to have you back on again someday. And Luke Cheeseman, where can people find you online if they want to follow you?
Yeah, you can find me at Cheese on Couch on both Twitter and on Instagram. And you can also check me out on theconguy.com and on thescareguy.com.
Ben.
Hey, everybody. Old buddy Ben here. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. Those are my big social media things. At BenKlieWer. And remember, the reason I'm always drinking out of this red cup is because whenever Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party.
You can find me online. Just go to theconguy.com. I am always on there. Jim Fry LA on Twitter or James D. Fry on Instagram. I hope to make those the same something one of these days so I don't have to keep on saying it twice. And one last thing, David, before we leave. Patrick, who came on and asked you a question, I can still see his arm out there in the background. Patrick, just last week was his first time he had ever seen the movie Jaws. And we so
really? Patrick,
give us Patrick, lean back in.
That's unusual.
Patrick, give us your 30-second assessment of Jaws, seeing it for the first time.
I've been waiting my whole life. When I was 9 years old, I went to Universal Studios and the thing came out on the ride. I'm not going to watch that movie. My mother traumatized me. She loves scary movies. I can't watch scary movies. I'm a grown man. I'm 36. I can't watch scary movies. Jim and Luke shared this beautiful gift with me. And I think a director's only job is casting well. And it was a perfect cast. I didn't understand that a scary action movie could be a compelling drama. Mm-hmm. And I got it. I got it. And Jim, you're right. In the 70s, they got that scary action can be compelling drama.
High drama.
Tight dialogue and fantastic craftsman actors.
Mm-hmm.
And we struggle with that these days, but not back then.
Yeah.
Haven't seen anybody react with the jump scares as much as I have with Patrick. He literally got up, jumped off the couch, and ran behind it. And was, oh, my God!
And you can probably guess what scene he was running behind the couch, though. All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching The Con Guy this week. Again, thank you, David, for coming on. Please follow us here on that hashtag show YouTube channel. Follow us. Like it. And if you hear us out there in the audio version of the world, make sure you give us some good comments. It helps us out a lot. Anyways, guys, hopefully we will see you guys again next week. Be following along on that hashtag show, on that con guy. All right. With that.
Thank you, David.
Thank you. Thank everyone.
All right.
It's a blast.
Bye-bye. You
Hello everyone, Dr. Geek here with a shout out to all the scientists who worked tirelessly to bring a COVID-19 vaccine into reality. Let's face it, creating something of this magnitude is a miracle worthy of Dr. McCoy himself. And now, Dr. Geek needs you to do your part. Remember, each shot is one small step back to normal, one giant leap to putting the pandemic behind us. We can do this. For more information, visit vaccines.gov to find your nearest provider.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.